a Bette Davis story.
Goody.
So I sat every night right next to the entrance so that I could prepare and then go running in. And when we were in Philadelphia, I think it was Philadelphia, the play was in a little bit of trouble, but Pat Rowe, who played the Dyke school teacher, and myself, had got really good reviews. And I mean, I'm on stage 3 minutes, if that.
Through the whole play?
Through the whole play.
Wow.
I have one scene where I run in to get to Shannon and she pulls me off. I still had to be, you know, hysterical going in then. And then I have this little one scene that's 2.5 minutes, 2 minutes. That's it. And so the night after the reviews came out, I'm sitting in my seat preparing, and I feel Bette Davis walk slowly by me, and then she walks away from me, and she goes to the stage manager and says, "What is she doing there?" The stage manager said, "She's preparing. She's been there since the beginning." She said, "Well, it's very upsetting to me." So he walks over to me, and I hear this, and he said, "Lane, would it be possible for you to prepare in the basement, which is 3 flights down, and there's no voice box?" So I go I have to prepare down there. But it was that whole episode was so upsetting to me that I didn't even need to prepare.
Yeah, you were hysterical.
You know, she, you know, thank God for the Actors Studio. I just knew how to use it. So I would go down 3 flights. I would come up and hear where they were, go back down, come up again until I went on stage. Mm-hmm. But for a while, I didn't have to prepare at all because I was just so naturally upset by this.
Did she talk to you other than just complaining about you to the stage manager?
Well, the first day that we had rehearsal, we had a reading. I talked to her and just, you know, in saying hello, introducing myself, and found out that her daughter loved horses like I loved horses. And I'm, oh, good, we have something in common. But then I know why she's the way she is. She was brought up under the studio system and you rule. And she had no clue that the better I was, the better she would be, the better Pat Hingle Patrick O'Neill was, the better she would be. And the other thing that just killed me one day was I came in I didn't have to be at rehearsal all the time because I just had this one little scene. But I came in this one day and Patrick O'Neill and Bette Davis were doing his breakdown scene in the hammock.
Yes.
He was having a nervous breakdown. I saw a man having a nervous breakdown. It was so moving and so brilliant. And at the end of it, Bette Davis gets off of him. She has her back to the audience and she's straddling him on the hammock. She turns around to Frank Cassar and she says, "If he is going to play the scene that way, nobody will hear me."
Oh, my God. All about me, 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 me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that, but you're right. They don't realize, you guys, if you're good, then you up your game and everybody's good. And
right.
Who did she play? She played the...
She played Maxine.
Ava Gardner role? She was miscast,
yeah.
If you ask me. I think I read some about her doing it, and she got really crappy reviews, and they didn't think that she was right for the part.
You mean Bette Davis?
Yes, Miss Davis.
You know, she didn't get as... I have to go back and read things, but I think that they were so afraid that the woman that played Hannah, what I can't remember her name right now, the actress that played Hannah, they were so afraid that Bette Davis wouldn't get the best applause in the world that they staged it so that they all came on together because she was just that type, you know. She was Hollywood raised.
Yes, and she was quite imperious, and she thought that she was a funny person, and I do enjoy her movies, but I just can't imagine Broadway with a younger woman working with her. Did you ever meet BD, or no? You never met her daughter.
No, I never met her daughter. No, mm-mm. Is that her name?
She was called BD because I guess she was Betty Junior or something. So it was like BD, Bette Davis, BD.
Mm. No, I guess I knew that at one point, but.
Yes. Well, I just caught up with her because she's now become like this minister and talks about Satan and stuff. And just recently, I guess she needs publicity or she's not getting the money rolling in, and said that Betty was a witch, and she saw Betty go onto her terrace from her bedroom, and she and her son, BD and her son, saw Betty started cackling, and she turned into a demonic figure in front of BD's own eyes. And she wrote a book about her mother and never put that in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Toots.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well.
So you worked there. You did how long were you in Iguana?
I was in Iguana for 11 months.
Wow.
And then I was cast as Honey in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And so Kazan let me out. But, and I didn't even have to read for Honey. They just gave it to me. But I was so emotionally spent that when we did our first table reading for, Virginia Woolf, I just thought, let me just not have to go into the depths of this character, into the emotional depths of her right now. So I just cooled it. And then when we did the first day of blocking, I said, I just can't go there right now. Let me wait another day. And I got a phone call that I was fired. But I think had I done it, I was so fragile emotionally that it might have just done me in.
That's such an intense kind of thing.
I mean, that's even more. I mean, it's the same kind of part. You're off stage. You're hysterical. You come on. You're hysterical. You go off. You come on. Every single time you enter, you're hysterical, and you can't fake it. You know. I keep thinking it would have been a wonderful next step for you, but not if it was into an insane asylum.
No, that wouldn't have helped. Who played Virginia Woolf? Who played Elizabeth Taylor's role?
Uta Hagen.
Uh-huh. You know,
it was an amazing cast.
Who was the guy? Richard Burton.
I can't get his name right now. Arthur comes to my mind. But then
Connell? Arthur Connell?
No.
Arthur.
There aren't
that many Arthurs around. So you didn't take, you know, I think that was a blessing in disguise that you didn't get it. Like you said, you couldn't have done it every night. It would have been too much for you. And you realized it, and that's, you know, put out that they saw, well, you know what?
Yeah.
It's just not right.
Yeah.
So when did you end up in L.A.?
Well, I ended up, I was going with an actor at the, I started going with Lou Antonio around this time. And then we went out to do the Hawaii movie. And I played, he was a missionary, and I played his wife. And so we eventually we just moved out there. I was fed up with doing theater at that point. It was just I just had had it, and it was so much fun to do television show where, yes, you sometimes you had to cry hysterically, but once it was on film, you were done.
No, you didn't have to repeat it night after night after night after night.
Yeah. I mean, then if you didn't get it and they printed it, you know, that's not good either. But most of the time I felt happy with my work because I knew how to work, and I knew how to go into myself and cry, which is you have to do a lot. But then once you were done with it, you were done with it, you know. So it was I really enjoyed doing TV. I really enjoyed that.
You did so much of it. I'm looking at all the stuff you did, and I know Lou Antonio. Of course, I IMDb'd him, but I remembered him. And if you married him, you ended up marrying him and having two daughters with him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you guys have to know who, if you've seen anything in the 70s, you certainly should know who he is. He also directed tons of stuff in the 70s, right? 70s and 80s. And, but if you are classic TV fans, you'll know him from Star Trek as the guy. I don't know the name of the guy, but he was painted half black and half white.
Right.
So, yeah, I remember in that. And he was also a monkey who was turned into a man on Bewitched, because I own those episodes. He was hysterical. And you two were together. You're the cute little couple. Very adorable. You were on Gunsmoke a lot.
Yes, and that was the funnest fun. I just loved doing that show. I loved the character of Mary Florine, and I loved everybody on it. It was just, those were the happiest times working on that show.
With Kitty, Amanda Blake, what was the guy's name? Arness? James Arness.
James Arness.
God, that was like the longest running show forever, but now I think something's taken its place, or a couple of them has taken its place. How was Miss Kitty? She had a tragic death, that poor thing, and I didn't realize how young she was when she died.
She did, but I've forgotten how she died.
AIDS.
Ay, yi, yi.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. She married some guy. He didn't tell her that he, I don't know, I don't know if he had full-blown AIDS, but he had HIV. And basically, he was bisexual, leaning more towards gay. And they had sex, I'm sure, and that's how she got it. And that's how the poor woman died. And she was only in her 50s. She looked a lot older. Yeah.
I had forgotten. I knew that it was tragic, but I had forgotten why.
You did a lot of groovy things in the 70s. I see you were on the Mod Squad, Cindy Jeffers.
That was fun,
You had a really good time doing that?
I had a wonderful time doing that.
Did you like the cast?
Yes, I did.
Julie, who was it? Peggy Lipton?
I didn't really work with her. I worked with the guy.
Michael Cole?
Yeah. And I think that was, I had to be dropped from a parachute. That was fun. it was, I wasn't really dropped out of a real parachute, but, they set them up and and then, I mean, it was just a fun show to do. I just enjoyed it a lot.
And then this is when I IMDb'd you. You did The Partridge Family as, and you played Janet, who was very groovy. You worked in a groovy shop. You wore really groovy hippie clothes. And you rejected Keith Partridge, who I think you were the only character on The Partridge Family that ever rejected Keith Partridge.
Yeah.
I was watching it with my stepdaughter. TV Land played it and Brady Bunch, all that, and I Love Lucy. So we were watching it, and I saw you. And then I IMDb'd you. I said, I bet she was a dancer. I bet she did ballet. Because my stepdaughter's mom studied ballet, came to be a ballet dancer, but she didn't get the work here in New York. And then, hence, I IMDb you, and I see that I was correct. I knew you were a dancer. I knew that you were a ballet lady. And then we both said, how could she do that to Keith Partridge?
Oh, my God.
I love my stepdaughter. She was so cute. We used to watch everything. She hated I Love Lucy because it wasn't in color. You know, those kind of kids. But you were cute in that. And then there's The Interns. I just watched this movie tonight. I am a maniac for 70s movies of the week. Maybe I'll Come Home in the Spring. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
And you were adorable. You played Sally Field's younger sister.
Right.
Sally had run away and gone with the hippie, groovy people. And then she got back home. And you played with Eleanor Parker, who I loved in Cage. And Jackie, I think, Cooper, he played.
Jackie Cooper, yeah.
He was the kid in The Champ in the 30s, I believe. And Sally, how was that? Oh, and also Mr. Kung Fu. What's his name? David Carradine.
Right. That was one of the best things that I did. And it was awesome working with Sally. We got along so well, and neither one of us, and she, this was the first, this was really her getting out of the nun and all the, you know, the
gidgety stuff.
The stuff that she did so well. And so one of the first scenes that was shot was one where she's having a emotional breakdown after she first comes home. And she talked to me and she said, can you help me do this? Because she knew that I had done, you know, a lot of emotional parts. And I remember telling her, you know, just sit quietly, get relaxed, think of, put yourself in a place where you have been and just kind of recreate that place. I mean, it was kind of instantaneous acting advice. She was brilliant in that scene. She was so hysterical. She was absolutely phenomenal. And we had such a good time working together, and neither one of us liked Eleanor Parker and Jackie Cooper.
Why? Were they me? Well, they were horrible parents. No wonder people ran away from them. They were monsters.
Well, I mean, it was perfect that we didn't like them. And the reason we didn't is because they were kind of old school acting.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we were the new ones.
Whippersnappers.
so it just, neither one of us tried to make their acquaintance in any way, because it was just perfect the way it was, you know. And I love Joe Sargent. He was marvelous to work with. It was just one of the highlights was doing that show.
It's very good. This is the first time I've seen it. Do you have Amazon Prime? You can watch it on Amazon Prime. It's great. You were so cute. I can't spoil it. I think you guys should watch it. It's really like the 70s era, groovy. How was David Carradine? Because I know he got it. He was heavy duty into the old hippie scene. I think they named their son Free or something. He and Barbara Hershey.
Yeah. I didn't really work with him that much. Sally worked with him more than I did.
Oh, because they always would go, you know, they'd be in the present day and then there'd be flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And then one day he came and you were in the pool and you met him. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to end up, you were going to end up going with him to get out of your parents' home, which I didn't blame either of you. And the ending was sad to me for poor Sally. So you guys did some, okay, so you did Owen Marshall, you did McLeod, which was mm-hmm. Mannix, the scapegoat, you did the FBI, you know who I think is hot? Well, you know, like, I love classic movies, obviously, I do this podcast, but I never thought Ephraim Zemblis Jr. was cuter, you know, because who thought of Ephraim Zemblis Jr., but... In his day, he was one cute boy. In his day, he certainly was. But, you know, like he was like Mr. Tough Guy on that. So you were on McMillan and Wife, mm-hmm. Jennifer Carter, and it was Greed. And how was that experience with Rock and Susan?
Well, it was fine. You know, Lou directed that. And I did get to kiss Rock Hudson, mm-hmm. and he was so sweet. He was just such a dear, dear, dear man.
I loved him, and I had his biographer on a few weeks ago, and through his book, they're going to make a film. He's going to have a major motion picture made about Rock, and it covers everything. But it's just so nicely... I love the book, and I can't wait to see who they cast in the movie because neither of us could think of anybody. They'd have to get somebody new because who could play Rock?
Yeah. But
the book was wonderful. He was great. And so he was a real sweetie. Did you deal with Jenna? What's her name? I heard Susan St. James was kind of a pill sometimes.
I don't think I dealt with her on that.
And then you did the Rockford Files, Houston Prowley. Where's Houston? I guess you were kidnapped or something.
And that was fun because I got to ride a horse.
And you love your horses.
Yeah.
How is James Garner? Was he a nice fellow?
Oh, he's wonderful. He is just wonderful. He was so fun to work with. And he's just... one of those lovely human beings, you know?
He seemed like he would be. He just seems like such a nice man.
Yeah, he is. I can't say enough good things about him. He just was fun and there and, you know.
Not like full of himself or anything like that. Then there's a Serpico TV series. I never heard of that. I didn't know they had one. Gemini Man, a mini series. Gemini.
I forget what I did in that.
You were a B girl in Just a Little Inconvenience.
I did so much.
I know,
some of
you
it
did.
Had just gone out of my
I'm just reading
head.
Your whole thing. I've got your IMDb. Breaking Up is Hard to Do, a TV movie.
Lou directed that, and I worked opposite Billy Crystal, and that was fun. He was wonderful to work with, too.
He seems like he would have been a good guy. And that he was just starting. He wasn't into any big stuff there. 17. I'm just looking at all your work. So you went from there. You took some time in between, but you did a TV series. Who knew they did Walking Tall? I didn't know. Oh, I do remember you from this. I didn't ever watch The Waltons until, like, maybe... 7 years ago when there was just so much going on and I knew it was now too, but I, you know, I'm over the Waltons, but I watched it a few times and you were on it as a hillbilly. And do you remember that? I think they had the fake John Boy on at that time.
I just remember it was fun. I don't remember anything about it.
Yeah, you didn't have to.
But I just remember it was a fun one to do. But I only did one TV film where that I didn't like, and it wasn't I didn't like the film. I didn't like the director, and that was the only one. He just was not up to par, and I guess gave me some directions or something that I didn't agree with. And I'm not hard to work with, but this somehow we just didn't hit it off.
Okay,
so
that was it. Was he mean to you? Was he mean to you on it?
I don't know which show it was.
Oh.
I don't remember which show it was.
Okay, so let's talk about something. And I told you, you could have been nominated for Best Supporting Actress for one scene. You were in the amazing Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and you played Rita. And you guys will remember her, Ellen Burstyn, Alice, starts singing in this bar, and she meets this good old boy who is played by Harvey Keitel, and they start having a fling.
Mm-hmm.
And then enters Rita. That scene is amazing. You come in, Alice has no idea that he's married. And you come in, you start crying and slobbering, and you were amazing. And how was that, working with Ellen Burstyn and doing that movie? And Harvey Keitel.
The night before, Harvey and I had dinner together, and we just had such a good time together. And then we were going to shoot the scene the next day. And I went up to the director, and I said, because I know me, and I said, I hope you can get this emotional scene on the first take, because that'll be my best one. And so I prepared, as usual. I went in and did the scene. Ellen was amazing to work with. I mean, it was once again set up. It was a setup for the actors to do their very best work.
It was amazing. And then... Go on. I'm sorry.
And then Harvey comes in, and neither Ellen or I had to act. He was terrifying. I remember just trying to get out of there.
He was kicking you out of there, literally.
I had to crawl across glass, not real glass, but you know, the glass the bottles that they bring. I don't know what they make, but it's not real.
Yeah.
But I got cut up going out of there Ellen and I said this to each other. Neither one of us were acting. In fact, I heard that later, after that scene, she really had to go back to her dressing room and recuperate.
It was intense. It was scary. He was a maniac, which was great. And you two were perfect, because she's just sitting there listening to you cry at the table and the whole thing. And then in comes Harvey Keitel, the maniac, and just treats you like you're a piece of trash and kicks your butt out. It's just unbelievable. I love, you know, that scene really stands out to me in that movie. I just loved your work in that movie. That was amazing, really. All of you, you did a great job.
The director sets the tone and gives actors permission to do their work, and the tone was set for us. I love it when it's like that, when you're so I've worked with directors that didn't care. They would set up a scene and then they'd go back and read the Fitch magazine or something, you know. And they could care less. And I don't even know if they watch. They're just so bored with directing. But that, I don't like that. But on the same token, if they are like that, just stay out of my way and let me do my work. You know.
Well, it was great. So you liked Alan Burstyn a lot. And you liked Harvey.
Yes, I did. I mean, I see Ellen a lot at the Actors Studio.
You still go there?
Oh, yes.
Are you teaching? Or do you just sit in? No?
No, I sit in, and sometimes I work on stuff that I want to work on.
I love Ellen Burstyn. She's still there, huh? She still goes in, too. How cool.
She is one of the artistic directors.
Ah. I love her work.
Yeah, me too.
And so to me, that was an amazing film you did. I just loved it. And you're always believable. And I do think I remember you because I have these things. You're in The Streets of San Francisco. So you worked with Carl Malden and Michael Douglas.
Yes.
How was Carl Malden?
Did I have a scene with him?
You were Rosie Johnson. Hi, doggies.
I know, but I don't know.
You're also.
I know I had a scene with him. Oh, I'll tell you a funny thing. Yes. It was a rodeo. I was a rodeo rider, and there was one scene when whoever I was in love with got hurt, and I had to jump into the arena from, you know, up high and run to him. And I got there before somebody, I don't know if it was Michael Douglas, or I got there before somebody that was a star. And the director came up and asked me if I would not run so fast. So, I said, okay.
I'm jumping and running. I'll slow it down. Thanks, pal. You did Kung Fu, An Eye for an Eye. Did you like Kung Fu?
That was an amazing part. And I think I lost a child in that. And at the same time, I was pregnant with my second daughter, Angelique. And so when there was a scene when my child in the film is being buried, and I fell apart. And somebody stopped the scene. Because they were worried about me, and I don't think it was it David Carradine that stopped the scene. Anyway, that was just I don't remember all the details of that. I just remember that it was so, you know, I'm carrying a child.
That's
and
pretty,
I'm burying
that would be very,
a child.
Yeah, very emotional. One thing I want to ask you about that I saw on this that you did. Oh, you were in The Heat of the Night tons of times, the TV show.
Yeah, and I love doing that show. Carol O'Connor is the best of the best of the best. Everything is for the actor's work. Everything. I mean, he just makes it so, everything, everybody cow ties to giving the actress or the actor whatever they need to do their best job.
So he's a total pro and gets it. He got it.
Yeah.
Who else? Who played the Mr. Tibbs? Henry Rollins?
Was he the black actor?
Yes.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think it was him. I'm not
He's
sure.
Very, very, very good looking.
Yes, he was a very good looking guy.
Yeah.
And Also, Carol O'Connor's son was in it as one of his deputies, and he died of a drug overdose. Poor,
you know, I know. He was not there. I just remember working with him, and you know, he wasn't fun to work with because he wasn't giving anything, and I think it.
You think he was high?
I don't know. That's just my. I didn't know anything at the time, but I just remember that it was, you know, I was on my own. I'm not working off of anybody. With Carol, you were working off of somebody, you know, and if you were working with somebody else, he set everything up there for everybody to be, every actor there to be the very best that they could possibly be.
I always liked him so much. There's something in post. You've worked forever. You took some time, I see, off. You made a documentary with Lou.
With Lou?
Didn't you?
I didn't. With you?
About healing, about people who have been abused or something.
Oh,
and the
but
arts.
That wasn't with Lou. No,
oh,
that wasn't with
Lou. I thought he directed
it. I did that
it.
On my own.
Oh,
no.
It was really good. I watched clips of it and was very, very good. And I totally agree with that. And it was a really good I enjoyed it. But didn't enjoy it like, oh, this is fabulous. These poor women were abused or this or that. But to see them getting the joy out of performing and doing what they wanted to do was really great.
Well, and that was done with a friend of mine called Nunzio Fazio. Directed it and cut it, and we worked really well together on pulling it together, and then it got a couple of awards. Got one award in Wales,
cool,
at a film festival, and then an award somewhere else in the United States, Park City, Utah. So it did some good stuff.
And it was, I think it was a very good, like I said, it's can be downbeat, but it's really positive. It ends up, you know, to show how these women can just being creative, doing something different with all the crap thrown at them, that they are just rocking it.
Mm-hmm.
So what you got coming out now is Carmen post-production. What's up with that?
Carmen.
Yeah, that's what it has on your thing. Carmen.
No, there's nothing. I don't even know what that is.
Isn't that funny? Who put that up there? Major Arcana?
Oh, Major Arcana is a wonderful low-budget film that I did since I've been in New York. And it's something that needs to... I'm pulling for it because it needs to be out there, because it says something that we need to hear and need to experience.
What is it? What's the, what does it say?
Well, that we can overcome whatever we need to overcome. We can move on mainly what it said. And I play a deranged mother, and I am scary. I couldn't believe it when I saw me in it. I thought, "Woo, my goodness. I scared me."
So it hasn't come out yet.
Well, I went to it. They entered it in a film festival in England, and I did go to England. I shouldn't have, because I spent too much money. But I went to England just because it was such an amazing experience. I love the people so much. I want this movie to really do well, because the world needs it. They need to see this. And you know, that's kind of the... I don't know what the Carmen was. What was that?
I have no idea, but that's what it says at the end of the thing, Carmen post-production.
I don't know what that is.
Well, maybe it's something in your future. Who knows? To be or not to be. Anyway, Lane, we have talked an hour and 21 minutes.
Well, it's been such fun talking with you on the phone.
You too. I love you. And like I said, I just, you know, I notice you in everything. And when John O'Dowd, our dear friend, mentioned you, he said, I have somebody you might want on a guest. I said, of course I do. I know who she is. I love her. So thank you, John. And Lane, you were fabulous. And if you ever want to come on and talk some more and give us some more stories, which were fab, I'd love you to.
Okay, great. And then we'll get together at some point.
I'm close by, so you know.
And I'll maybe have a dinner here and invite you here with John.
Oh,
and
I'd
Steve
love or, that. That would be so much fun.
And or we can just hook up and get a coffee or something.
That would be fabulous. I would love
okay.
it.
Okay,
I'm here. Okay, so thank you so much, Lane, and thanks you guys for listening to True Stories of Tinseltown, and I'll be talking to you soon, and I hope I'll be talking to Lane soon. Thanks so much,
yes,
Lane.
You
thanks,
will.
Everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Des yeux qui font baisser les miens, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en d'amour à plus finir, un grand bonheur qui prend sa place, des ennuis, des chagrins s'effacent, heureux, heureux, en mourir. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en quelque chose.